Golf Smarter number 347, published on August 21, 2012, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And by Bonobos, an online men's apparel company that understands that men's pants just don't fit well. Click on their ad at golfsmarter.com or go to bonobos.com, spelled B-O-N-O-B-O-S. If you've never shopped there before, now's a great time because every new customer receives an exclusive 20% discount off of your purchase when you use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Increased focus through hydration and our Short Game Academy.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Hey, before we get into our interview with Bob Foreman on how to increase your focus through better hydration, I want to let you know that Golf Smarter is taking a brief two-week hiatus because I'm moving. After living and working in this home for more than 20 years, my wife and I are finally downsizing. So when I return with a new episode scheduled for the week of September 10th, we'll either hear more from Bob Foreman or comedian Paul Meyerhog talking about his traveling comedy golf troupe, The Hackers. I've also scheduled Jeff Mangum, recognized as one of the world's foremost putting experts and the longtime putting guru of Golf Smarter, to join us for a couple of shows right after that. I appreciate your patience and I hope you will continue to download the show when we come back. Now, welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Bob.
Hey, Fred.
How are you?
I'm doing good. You?
I'm doing well and love to talk about fitness. Golf fitness seems to be one of those items in the golfer's bag that gets forgotten about on a regular basis.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely a spoke on the golf development wheel that a lot of people don't really think about, don't realize, aren't aware, but it's a significant spoke to help them better their game.
Yeah, I love that analogy, of that metaphor of using it as a spoke, because, you know, part of the wheel is going to break down if you don't have everything strong.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, with the skill piece, you know, the lessons that golfers take, the equipment piece, I mean, those are all important. Those of all, especially the equipment, has gotten better over the years. But, you know, I usually correlate that to somebody who goes out and buys a used car and the car doesn't run all that well and goes out and spends a lot of money to put four new tires on it thinking it's going to make the car run better, but you're still stuck with that mechanism that's driving a car, and that's the engine. In this case, it's the golfer himself, and most golfers don't realize that it's their own bodies that are holding them back from better golf.
So let's not assume that people are going to start losing weight and go on diets just so they can improve their golf. But you don't have to have the Tiger Woods type of body, the Olympic-style body specimen to be an efficient golfer, do you?
Oh, no, definitely not. And I think a lot of people, you know, are kind of reluctant to get into golf fitness programs because they feel that, you know, geez, do I got to run a 5K? Do I have to lift my body weight? And it's really not about that.
I'm so glad to know that.
Yeah. I mean, it's really about kind of identifying where the deficiencies are, the anatomical deficiencies, the muscle tightness, the muscle weakness, and the muscle imbalance. And then once you identify those, to target an exercise program to correct those. And when you do that, you're going to allow the golfer to move more efficiently, and therefore they're going to be able to swing a better golf club.
So that was my next question, is what will the golfer notice once they start correcting those inefficiencies?
Well, I mean, within a relatively short period of time, within 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks.
Really?
And it really depends on how consistent they are with the program. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, if they're not going to do it, they're not going to see results. So, I mean, you got to put a little effort into this, you know, and in the society that we're in, where everybody wants it yesterday, it takes a little effort. But if they stay pretty consistent with their programs, like I say, in a relatively short period of time, they're going to feel more flexibility. They're going to have more range of motion. They're going to be making better ball contact, distance. And we all know distance is still king in golf. They're going to be able to get down the fairway another 10, 15, 20 yards. I mean, even some of the 80-year-olds that I'm working with, in a relatively short period of time, they come back all excited in the fact that they're now, you know, starting to drive the ball past their other golfing buddies. So, I mean, you're going to find these results fairly quickly, and it really all depends on your compliance with the exercise program.
Right, right. I don't want to correct anything you're saying, but here at Golf Smarter, we're more focused. We're not focused on distance. We're focused more on accuracy. Like we like to say, I would much rather have 10 feet closer than 10 yards farther any day. You know, so so it's beyond that. I didn't want to say, well, I mean, yeah, everybody loves distance, but come on, folks, get over it.
But I mean, you know, the other thing is, if you have deficiencies and if you combine those with poor swing mechanics, in a lot of instances, the anatomical deficiencies are causing those poor swing mechanics. In some cases, it's just bad habits.
Right.
But when you combine those two, you know, the inconsistency of which you're swinging the golf club is not going to afford you the accuracy that you talk about and or the distance. So once you get into a program and you start correcting those deficiencies, your ball contact is going to improve tremendously.
And I want to establish that you don't come to this as a PGA certified instructor. Give us a little of your history so we can establish your credibility on why we're talking about fitness with you.
Well, I have a master's degree in exercise physiology, which means I studied the effects of exercise on the body. And I've been in the fitness field for just over 30 years. I've worked a lot with people with low back issues. And, I mean, with golf, gosh, I mean, that's number one in terms of injury. So that's helped me work with a lot of golfers to get them back out on the golf course. And then back in 2006, went down to the World Golf Fitness Summit that was presented by the Titleist Performance folks, Greg Rose and Dave Phillips. And the three-day workshop was phenomenal. I mean, it was one of those wow moments. And I think Golf Week magazine even said this now has become golf's new obsession. And it basically changed the game overnight. And, you know, it introduced a whole new spoke of the wheel, as we talked about. And so I came back, and I run a medical fitness center in North Carolina and started a little golf fitness academy and putting some of those, the things that we learned, to practice. And I was seeing that these people that were coming through the program were coming back with some real positive feedback. So I went back and got certified with TPI, and I've also have gotten certifications through Flexor, which is a neuromuscular type program for golf, brain-body type connection. And then I've also studied a lot of Gary Gray stuff, who has now affiliated himself with Nike. And Gary does movement science. He's up, I believe, in Michigan, does a lot with biomechanics, and phenomenal stuff. So, I mean, it's real good stuff. I love it. It's my passion, and I just love to see golfers improve. And my biggest thrill is getting people back out on the golf course who have been injured.
You brought up lower back issues, and I've talked about that. We've talked about TPI a lot. I've actually had many TPI instructors from all over the United States on the Golf Smarter podcast, and just fascinated by what they bring to the table. But when you talk about lower back issues, I'm someone who has suffered from that and have tried to do Pilates and yoga, and I do yoga on a regular basis. But what I've found personally is that my biggest issues are sitting, because I basically sit at my desk doing computer work all day, and sleeping. And I have more pain in the morning when I wake up before I do my stretching exercises than I do at any other time. And also I've noticed that after I finish a round of golf, I feel better. It's to me, it's not golf that's wiping out my back. It's not the left to right lateral movement that's hurting me. It's the bad position in bed and on my chair. And I've even spent a lot of money on chairs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's two things that generally lead up to discomfort or injury, and low back is very prevalent, obviously, across the board. I mean, with all types of golfers, amateurs, professionals alike, men and women. And, physically, there are specific deficiencies in the muscle groups, like mostly in guys, it deals with tight hamstrings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you touch your toes? And if you can't, it means your hamstrings are tight, and that's one of the biggest factors that lead up to bad backs, because of the relationship that the hamstrings have to the hip bone, and then how it pulls the hip bone out of balance, and that causes a straightening of the lumbar spine, and that puts more pressure on the discs, and so on and so on and so on. In women, we tend to see more tightness in the hip flexors, which are muscles in the front part of the hip. And that kind of does a reverse. It pulls the hip forward and causes more arching of the lower back. And you see a lot of S posture type address positions in women when they're standing over the ball. It's more prevalent in women. Those two can physically cause problems with the lower back. Now, when you combine that with swing faults, like reverse spine, like early extension where the hips are moving towards the ball, like S posture as we talked about, that's a perfect storm for back issues. And it's kind of interesting how you talked about sitting. Excuse me. I wrote a whole article, and I've got this whole workshop about the anatomy of a sitter and how sitting impacts your golf game. Because when you sit, the body adapts to the positions that you place it in most of the time. And we're seeing a lot of C posture these days, even in younger golfers. I mean, it used to be kind of an old golfer's disease. You know, as you got older, you just tended to kind of lose your posture, and you got a little more bowed in the upper back. Mm-hmm. And so you would kind of hunch over the ball. But we're seeing that now a lot with younger golfers because of the computer and being hunched over the computer all day. And when you sit over a computer, and the same thing with dentists. I mean, all my dentists have C posture because they're hunched over their patients. So what happens there is you tighten the muscles in the front part of the body, in the chest area. You elongate the muscles in the upper back. And when you shorten muscles, you tighten. And when you elongate, you weaken. So you start to get that rounded shoulder posture, and you take that out on the golf course. In the lower body, when you sit, you basically shorten your hamstrings and you shorten your hip flexors. So there's the dynamic two. You also elongate your glutes, which are your butt muscles. And that's really where you get a lot of power from in the golf swing. And you shorten the quad muscles in the front part of your thigh. So the fact that you're tightening your hip flexors and your hamstrings are going to set you up anatomically for back issues. And then when you go out there and start swinging the golf club, you know, in many cases, that can add to, in your case, it's probably loosening you up. So you're feeling a little bit better after the golf game. But at some point, that may come back to bite you.
Oh, it does. It's not at some point. It's a regular thing. I also have noticed that when I remember to quiet my lower body, on my swing, because I've had an issue with the sway, left and right sway on my swing. Mm-hmm. But when I remember to quiet my lower body, those rounds, I feel much better as well than in my back.
Yeah, and, talking about Gary Gray, he has this thing. A lot of times we find tightness in the mid-back, in the thoracic spine area.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing again, because a lot of people sit and they're hunched over stuff or just from inactivity. And when you're tight in the mid-back, and again, I see this a lot, what happens is rotation in the upper body is supposed to come mainly from the thoracic spine, the mid-back, not the lower back. A lot of people think that their rotation is going to come from their lower back. And the lower back really is geared more for flexion front to back, and it's more geared for stability, not mobility. So when your mid-back is tight and you're bringing the club back, it's only going to go back so far. In order for you to get the club back further, you're going to have to recruit the lower back. And again, the lower back just doesn't like that. So over time, you know, that's just going to put stress to the lower back, and that's going to add to the issues as well. So that's still a whole nother component that you have to consider.
Sure. Very interesting. Tell me about you said articles. You have articles online that you've written about these topics?
Yeah, I put together a kind of an educational golf fitness website. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of articles on there, again, based on my experiences working in the fitness field and, you know, just the stuff that I've learned through TPI and through Gary Gray and through the Flexor program. And it's at, can I mention the website?
No, don't do that. All right, now you can.
It's www.
No, it's not. There's no. You don't need that anymore. Go ahead.
Oh, you know.
No, you really don't.
golffitcarolina.com. There's one F and one T, so it's like golf it Carolina.
Oh, I'm glad you clarified that. Golffitcarolina.com.
Yeah. GolfitCarolina.com.
Okay, golfitcarolina. Yep. .com, and I will definitely put links in our show notes as well so that people just get it at golfsmarter.com and they go right to it. Or go ahead, go to golfitcarolina.com. Just make sure you say golf it. I want to come back because there was an article that I found online that prompted me to get in touch with you. This episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like to have the Golf Smarter listener try it out for themselves. And if you've never had an Audible account before, we would prompt you to try this out because you will get a free audiobook of your choice. All you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Audible is AUDIBLE. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And I really get a kick out of hearing what people have been reading recently. You got a book, Bob, that you'd like to recommend that maybe we can listen to?
Killing Lincoln by Bill O'Reilly.
The controversial Bill O'Reilly, that guy?
Yeah.
Well, let's not talk about that. But why now? Is his politics involved in Killing Lincoln? And it is available on Audible. It's called Killing Lincoln, the shocking assassination that changed America forever. And yeah, Bill O'Reilly narrates it as well.
Yeah, I tell you, it's no, I don't think his politics does really kind of get into the book itself. I mean, it's good. It kind of describes the last part of the Civil War and then, you know, the kind of what Lincoln went through and Lee and Grant and the chapters are short, which is good. But really kind of for history buffs, especially if you love Civil War, great book, the way he kind of describes the battles and stuff like that. And I didn't know Custer was involved with the Civil War as well, General Custer, but he was pretty prominent, especially at Sawyer Bridge or Sailor Bridge, where the last battle kind of took place. But then it kind of gets into the days after the end of the Civil War, where you know, Lincoln was shot and Booth and all that. Very, very good book.
Awesome. Killing Lincoln, the shocking assassination that changed America forever. It's by Bill O'Reilly, and it is available on Audible. So it's almost 8 hours long, so that would be a great introduction for you. So make that your free audiobook or any other of the books that we've talked about or anything you want. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and sign up for your account today, and that could be your free audiobook. Bob, thank you so much for the recommendation.
Yeah, no problem. My kids love to listen to those when they're driving.
Yeah. Oh, it's the greatest. Yeah. I'm telling you, when you're driving, when you're working out, I know people who listen to them when they're playing golf. And the thing that's so great about audiobooks is that it makes time go by faster than like just listening to music, because you just get caught in the story. And with a good narrator, audiobooks are phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Get yourself on a treadmill, and before you know it, you're an hour in.
Good idea. I love it. That's very funny. So the article that You wrote that I read that I just like, of course, why aren't we talking about this? Is about hydration. Is about making sure that when it's hot outside and you're playing, that you take care of yourself. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the summer here, you know, one of the things that a lot of people don't think about is the heat and the humidity. And being down south here and actually just kind of, you know, with the PGA event that just took place at Kiawa, you know, it made me think about what the golfers were going to face out there, especially being a little further south and, you know, in the environment. And how much it can take a toll out of your game if you're not really prepared to play in that environment. So, you know, that kind of led me to write the article. But it's really key to get yourself to acclimate to the weather conditions, whether it be the heat and humidity or the cold, so that your body can function more efficiently. But especially, I think, in more the warmer environments where it really kind of takes a toll. And your golf game can suffer if you're not prepared to play in those conditions, or if you don't kind of plan for, you know, keeping hydrated and stuff like that. And like I say, you'll suffer.
And
not fun.
No. Describe suffer. I mean, what are we talking about here? That you're not going to make it through your round, or what? When you say suffer, what are you thinking of?
Well, I mean, getting into things like, you know, heat cramps and heat exhaustion and heat stroke, not fun stuff. I mean, hydration is key, and even small percentages of dehydration can really have an impact on the way you function, the muscle contractions, the brain, body, nerve pathway, and the function, the way that functions. I mean, hydration is vital when you're out there, and especially when you're trying to perform an activity, because what happens is it kind of takes the fluid out of the blood, and your blood becomes very viscous, and that causes your heart to work harder, and that can lead to some, you know, more serious stuff that you don't want to have to happen. So it's important to make sure that you're drinking water. And really, that's the best thing that you can drink while you're outside in an activity is just plain old water. If you tend to sweat a lot, you know, that's the time to maybe start reaching for an electrolyte replacement drink to help get some of the minerals, the potassium, the magnesium, the calcium, and other essential minerals back into your system that you're going to lose through your sweat. But it can really make or break your game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, when I've had the situation where the wheels fall off the wagon, you know, you get to the 15th, 16th hole, and all of a sudden nothing is working, and you're starting to ache, and everything is bad. I found that when I hydrate throughout my round, that happens a lot less.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're out there in the heat, the body's trying to dissipate the heat, and that's why you sweat. When the humidity is up, and when you combine the heat and the humidity, it forms the heat index. And, I mean, you can have kind of serious days, even when the temperatures are in the upper 80s, if the humidity is very high. That can raise the heat index to levels that can be somewhat dangerous. Yeah. And what happens is the higher the heat index goes, the tougher it is for that sweat to evaporate. And when the sweat evaporates, that's when the body kind of cools itself. So because that can't happen efficiently, the internal body temperature starts to go up. And that's when you get into stuff, like I say, the heat cramps. And at some point, you know, you may even stop sweating because the mechanism's shutting down. And, you know, you don't want to even get to that point. And that's why it's important to make sure that you start drinking early and drink often throughout the round. I mean, the other thing that you can also do to prepare yourself is nowadays, you know, with the sweat wicking materials that are coming out, you know, polyester is making a comeback through the sweat wicking apparel. And that helps draw that moisture away from the body and helps to dissipate it into the environment so that it can keep you cooler while you're playing your round of golf. So that's definitely an advantage that we have nowadays that, you know, is popular and will probably continue to gain popularity as the science gets better in that regard.
So even if you do sweat a lot, having the sweat stay on your body is bad as opposed to it dissipating through the wicking material?
Yeah, the reason you sweat is that you want to be able to have that sweat evaporate, and when it does, it cools the body.
Okay.
So it does that through various processes. You know, the wind, if there's a wind that's whipping around, that helps draw heat away from the body.
Okay.
The sweat evaporating helps draw heat away from the body. So if that heat index, especially when the humidity goes up, and the moisture in the air is higher than, you know, the moisture on your skin, then the evaporation rate decreases. So the sweat basically just stays on your skin instead of getting evaporated. And that's when the cooling mechanism tends to become compromised to the point where you can get into those heat disorders.
Okay, I'm going to throw out a couple words here, and I'll let you riff on them, right? I'll just toss these out, and you give me assessment, good, bad, don't do that, try that, enhance that, okay? So you talked about water, okay?
Yeah.
Room temperature or iced?
They say the colder the better because it tends to get absorbed faster into the gut.
Interesting. Okay. The electrolyte drinks, your favorite?
I like the electrolyte replacement tablets. There's one out there called Noon, N-U-U-N. The reason being is that, you know, the electrolyte drinks are getting better in cutting back on the sugar and the calories, but you just don't know which ones are which. The electrolyte tablets are... you buy them in a tube, and basically they're like Alka-Seltzer. You buy a 16-ounce bottle of water, and you kind of plop the tablet into the bottle, and it fizzes. And they come in different flavors, and it gives you the electrolyte replacements that the other sport drinks offer, but there's only six or seven calories per tablet, so per bottle, and no sugar.
Oh, that's great tip. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you said they are flavored, but if you get non-flavored, because I just prefer water, do they have them that just don't have any impact on the taste?
Geez, I don't know.
Okay, we'll find that out. So we're going to Google N-U-U-N while you answer my next question. Now I'm just throwing softballs at you because I have a feeling I know where this one's going to go. Beer.
Well, beer is a diuretic. So, I mean, it's going to help to draw water out of your system. So, I mean, you want to avoid becoming dehydrated. So, not a good thing to have out in the golf course on a hot, humid day, you know, or at least not in excess, let's put it that way. After a round, hey, go for it.
And if you are going to have a beer with your buddies while you're playing, mix it up with water? Do, you know, one after the other, or just try to avoid it?
Well, I mean, like they say, everything in moderation.
Okay.
You know, some of these guys out there that are pounding the beers, especially on the hot, humid days, is probably not a good idea.
Okay. By the way, Noon, N-U-U-N.
Uh-huh.
Optimal Hydration, their website's down right now, but it is at nuun.com if anybody wants to look, and they have it available at Amazon and drugstore.com. It's all over the place, so definitely look into that.
Cyclists started that stuff, it started in the cyclists, bikers.
Mm.
Now then it got into runners, and now they're really pushing it to golfers, and I tell you, I sweat a lot, and so... I've tried it, and I felt it really helps, and especially like you say, in the back nine when normally you start dragging, it's really helped me stay in the game.
Nice, nice.
And I think they're coming out now with one that also has vitamins in it as well.
Okay.
You know, like the vitamin waters and stuff.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to throw another one. Coffee.
Coffee also is a diuretic. So, again, it's going to kind of draw water out of the system, so you got to be careful with that. I would put that with the beer category. Yeah, in moderation. Don't go too crazy with it.
Yeah, and caffeine. I mean, even if you're drinking decaf or caffeine, but how about, you know, like caffeinated sodas, Coke, Pepsi.
They're not. You know, sodas in general don't really provide much in terms of minerals or vitamins or anything like that. And if you enjoy the taste, go for it. There's not as much caffeine in those things. So, if that's what you prefer, as long as you
and, and what about caffeine during a round of golf? I mean, is it going to fire you up? Is it going to get you going? Or is it like just no impact at all?
Well, you know, Fred, that really depends upon the individual.
Okay.
Some people can down a gallon of coffee and go to sleep, while some people, can have a cup of coffee and they'd be up all night.
I'll tell you, if I have a cup of coffee after 10 a.m., I cannot, I can't go to sleep at night.
Yeah.
I'm a decaf guy.
It's gonna get the system going. I mean, it's going to get the heart rate up a little bit, possibly, again, and that affects people differently. I get heart palpitations if I have too much caffeine. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it does impact people differently, and you just got to kind of gauge for yourself, how you react to stuff like, caffeine and beer and all that.
And since we're talking about sweating and oversweating and whatnot, I have to throw this one out. I was watching the PGA Championship this year online. I was listening to their announcers. I wasn't doing it on television. And they brought up a tip that I'd never heard and I thought was absolutely wonderful, and I wanted to make sure that I share it. And that was towel maintenance during your round of golf.
Towel
maintenance. And what they were saying is make sure that you use one end of the towel for cleaning the ball in your club faces and the other end of the towel for wiping off your face and your hands.
That's probably a good idea.
I was like, oh my God, that's so simple. And I've never even thought about that. And I have many times wiped my face with the muddy end of a towel.
Well, if you're on national TV and you get mud on your face, that probably wouldn't be too good.
big disgrace. Play all over the place. We will rock you. Mud on your face. I'm sorry. Fascinating stuff. I appreciate your time, Bob. And again, tell everyone to, I will do this, go to golffitcarolina.com. And if someone wants to come and see you, where are you specifically?
I am in Greensboro, North Carolina, or High Point, North Carolina. And I'm also down in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And I enjoy offering golf fitness seminars to clubs and organizations. I don't charge anything for them. So,
oh, that's nice of you.
If anybody would like to offer,
Am I paying so much to have you on the show?
I don't know.
Just kidding. Bob, I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and I've gotten a lot of really valuable information. Hopefully someone else has as well. Thanks so much for being on Golf Smarter.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. Anytime.
Ooh, hey, new music. That's right, because in just a moment, we'll bring on Terry Kaler in our inaugural Score Zone Short Game Academy. But first, this episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast is brought to you by Bonobos.com. Got my new pair of caddy slacks from Bonobos last week and promptly wore them for my round at Harding Park in San Francisco. Here we are in the middle of summer where temperatures in the city by the bay struggle to reach 60 degrees, while only 30 miles north across the Golden Gate Bridge right here in Marin County, it's in the upper 80s. 30 miles, 30 degrees. Anyway, I actually played with my nephew who is in from out of town. He's much more stylish than I, but I can't tell you how impressed he was with how good his Uncle Fred was looking. Beyond how I looked, these pants felt great. And there was no discomfort or cinching, pinching, slipping, or bulging. So whether you're stylish or not doesn't matter, because when you wear a comfortable pair of golf pants or golf shorts designed by Bonobos, you're going to look and feel great. As always, Bonobos.com offers free shipping and no-hassle return that also includes the shipping. Check them out and see for yourself how great they are. And if they don't fit the way you want, send them back and Bonobos will pay for the return shipping. I recently read an article that podcast listeners like to do business with advertisers who support their favorite shows. So here's your incentive to thank them for choosing Golf Smarter as their only golf podcast. If you've never shopped at Bonobos.com before, click on their ad at GolfSmarter.com and get 20% off your entire order when you use the checkout code GolfSmarter. Bonobos.com, spelled B-O-N-O-B-O-S, or click on their ad at GolfSmarter.com. And now, without further ado, I'd like to bring back Terry Kaler, CEO of Score Golf and known on his blog as The Wedge Guy. Welcome to the Short Game Academy, Terry. It is great to have you back and to get this program started.
Well, I'm happy to be here. It's always fun, you know, actually addressing a real question from a real reader or listener. I write my blog twice a week, and sometimes, quite often, I'm making up topics, just what I think's interesting today. But this is fun when somebody has an issue that I can hopefully help them through, and then everybody else can learn something too, hopefully.
Well, and I won't take that personally that my questions aren't good enough in the podcast, but that's okay. I like getting other questions as well because it gives me a completely different perspective, and I like to hear what people are saying. So just to help set this up and let everybody know, if you click on the Score Short Game Academy button at golfsmarter.com, you'll be able to submit your question to Terry, and then every question that comes in, I forward to Terry. Terry reviews every question. He'll respond to your questions, and if he thinks it's appropriate that it's a question that everybody will get something from, he'll pick one or two, and we'll do them here on the Short Game Academy. And if Terry chooses your question, and I really have nothing to do with what he's choosing, I send them all. If he picks your question, you will receive a free, I don't want to call it a wedge, a scoring club from Score 4161 that'll be customized to your fit. And also you'll get a divot tool from Golf Smarter so that when you hit more greens, you'll be able to fix your marks and become a better golf citizen. So let's get right to it and go to our first question that you've selected. This one's from John Shields of Davis, California. And he says, Terry, I'm a big fan of what you're doing over at Score. And he also comments that he's a longtime Golf Smarter listener. Thank you very much, John. His question is about the 50 to 60 yard approach shot, which is bane of my existence as well. He says, for some reason, this in-between distance results in undue trepidation for me. Any shorter, and I can easily pitch or bump up a shot, and longer is an easy three-quarter wedge, but cannot figure out what the most reliable play is from 50 to 60 yards.
Well, that's a shot that gives everybody a lot of trouble, John, that half wedge, the dreaded half wedge, as we call it. But there's a way to get around this, and it's learning a good technique. You indicated the three-quarter wedge you're more comfortable with. What every golfer should learn is how to make a reliable half swing. When I say a half swing, what I mean is where your backswing position puts your hands roughly behind, you know, about opposite of your right armpit. So your left arm is about parallel with the ground. It's not further back than that. And your hands do not hinge a lot, just a little bit. One of the things I think I mentioned in an earlier broadcast is really go watch Steve Stricker. Go on YouTube and find videos of Steve Stricker and watch how simple his swing is. But your hands are halfway back to halfway through. So your follow through is, again, your hands end up about shoulder high, complete body turn. Take your sand wedge or your lob wedge or your gap wedge and go out and just practice this half swing till you get it really grooved. Hit a lot of golf balls with this. You can go to a ball field or a vacant lot and with your own shag bag and do this, but you got to hit a lot of shots to get the feel for this half swing where you can replicate this reliably. Then go through the high loft clubs in your set and see what happens with the 60 degree with this half swing. What happens with the 56 or a 54? You know, whatever high loft clubs you're carrying, see what happens and how far the ball carries with each of these swings. Then you can go out on the golf course. You can find out how far it's going to roll out with each of these swings. And with three or four of your high loft golf clubs in this one swing, you'll end up with five or six different shots you can hit with reliability and repeatability because you practiced it and you know what that half swing feels like. You can even dissect that further if you want in these half swings by gripping down on the club a little further, which I talk about in my book, The Score Method, which is available on scoregolf.com for a free download of our book called The Score Method. And it really dives into the details of using your hand position on the grip to change how far the ball will fly. So with your full swing in these different hand positions and four or five clubs, you've got 10 or 12 yardages with your new half swing that you're learning and four or five clubs, a couple of hand positions, you've got another 8 or 10 yards. And you'll find that you can dissect everything inside full swing pitch and wedge down to the grip down half 60, maybe a 40-yard shot, and you can really dissect the golf course. So practice that half swing, learn it, and just memorize it, and then use your different clubs with that half swing to get the different yardages you're after.
And always try to remember, too, to avoid that opportunity, right? I mean, like, for me, the chess match in golf of playing from the pin backwards, I try to position myself so I don't put myself in a 50 to 60 yard shot. I really try to avoid that, which means don't hit a driver if I don't need to. If I can get myself, especially with the confidence that I've gotten using the Score 41-61 wedges, man, you put that 46 degree in my hands from 110 yards, and I feel like I'm going to hit the stick. So especially on a par five, if I'm 250 out, I know I want to go 140. I don't want to hit it, you know, so I'm 50 yards out from the green. I don't want to take a long club.
Well, that's a very smart strategy for all golfers. If you find, and I call it the go-to shot, and it may be that you just have great confidence in your gap wedge, or you have great confidence in your P club. But if you know, find a yardage that you just know, boy, 89 or 94 or 102 or 110, this is a yardage I feel really confident in. Don't always try to hit the ball as close to the green as possible. And, I mean, even a good lesson from the U.S. amateur the other day, and the kid that won hit a 6-iron off the tee on this par 4 on the playoff hole. The other kid hit a driver over the green. That was the hole Arnold Palmer drove when he won his Open there, but at Cherry Hills. But this kid hit a 6-iron off the tee to like 78 yards, and he knew that my 60-degree wedge and my 3/4 swing, I'm going to be somewhere around the hole. And he hit it 15 feet behind the hole. He had a 2-putt to win, nestled down, turned out the ball went in for a birdie. But that's playing smart. That's playing to a yardage you know. I always tell the story about Zach Johnson. He did that at the Masters when he won. He played the par fives better than anybody and never went for one of them in two. Know your game, have your go-to shot, and learn that half wedge because you're going to have that sometime. But if that 3/4 wedge is a shot you have a lot of confidence in, well, hit one less club on those par fives and leave it back at 3/4 range.
Absolutely. Interesting, I mentioned playing with my nephew last week a little bit earlier in the show, and he is a big hitter. He's been playing all his life and is a low double-digit handicap and easily can drive the ball close to 300 yards. So we had one hole, but on the way to the golf course, he was telling me how miserable he's become on his short game. The 30, 40-yard shots, he has no confidence in it, and so he gets all freaked out, and he just can't do it. And any time he lost his cool that day was on a short shot that he screwed up. It's the only time he lost it. And at one point, there was a hole that was 303 yards. So he took out his driver. I took out my 3-wood, okay? And he put it within 15 yards of the green. He drove it really close. His second shot went 10 yards. And he still wasn't on the green because he just – and I'm like – so I said to him, I said, so I don't get it. Why would you put yourself in that position? He says, well, you got to go for it, don't you? I'm like, okay, never mind.
I won't get on that soapbox about the way the kids play golf these days, but I see it all the time. They hit it a mile and shoot 85.
Yeah. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, right.
So this 60-year-old man just drills them from 40 yards behind him off the tee. They don't know how to hit golf shots, but we won't go there. We got questions
yeah,
to answer.
We call that golf smarter. Okay.
Golf smarter. That's right.
All All right, second question. Another one from California, strangely enough, that you did that. Did you know that you picked two questions from California?
No, I didn't until I was just going through all the questions and trying to find two that I really thought we could really help the most people with, and these two came out, and then I'm looking at them and saw, oh, another one from California. So.
Well, see how we are here in California?
Yeah.
Anyway,
we all are troubled, and so I'm trying to help y'all.
We're troubled here in California. That's what it is. You're absolutely right. This one's from Paul Matsuda in Mill Valley, and it says, more times than I care to remember, I've had a good round going and end up in a sand trap in less than optimal conditions. Three or four strokes later, I'm out of the trap and on the green, or not. My question is, what is the best way to play out of wet sand, or in the case of a course that I play occasionally, sand that is the consistency of fine gravel, or my worst nightmare, a combination of the two. I've tried several techniques, but obviously have not stumbled upon the right combination. Maybe you have his answer.
Well, Paul, let's start with what we were just talking with John. John's question about this half wedge. You've got to learn a half wedge swing, and you've got to know how to put that club halfway back and how to rotate your body and bring it halfway through. Sand traps, bunkers, whatever, for most of us are much more troublesome. The tour player never runs into what you're talking about because their bunkers are all held to PGA Tour standards, and that's why they get to hit those fabulous shots out of the bunkers. But the rest of us, sand texture can change from hole to hole, course to course, even from one place to another in the bunker, and that's the golf that we all play as recreational players. So to me, there's several keys. When you walk into a bunker, the first thing you want to do as you walk in with your feet, size up the firmness, the resistance of that sand. Is this sand going to really kind of eat the golf club a little bit, or is this sand going to play like, almost like hardpan? Is it going to play, much more firm? So the first thing you want to do is feel that and get a feel for how much resistance that sand is going to give to the golf club. In a firm, wet sand situation, I like to play that shot almost like it's a little pitch out of the hardpan. Don't worry about hitting behind the ball a lot. Just hit you a nice little soft pitch shot with your highest lofted club. The ball's going to come out a little hotter as it would off of a tight lie. And just aim for a point a little past the flag to allow that this sand, the heavier sand, is going to slow your club down a little bit. If you get into the fluffier sand or the gravel, the fine gravel, a lot of times your feet will just really move into that gravel, and you'll find that there's not a lot of resistance here to the golf club. So when that club makes contact with the sand on the way down, that sand is not going to reject that club, for example, as much as the firm sand will. So there, it's just a bunker shot. It's lay the club open so you increase the bounce of the golf club. Pick a spot about 2 inches behind the ball, make that half wedge swing, and just float the ball out of the bunker. If you are not a low single digit, or if you are not a self-proclaimed sand expert, then understand that bunkers are hazards. You're not a tour player. The tour players get up and down out of bunkers, but bear in mind, they spend more time per day in the practice bunker than most recreational golfers spend in a lifetime.
Yeah. Don't the tour players aim for bunkers to because they're more confident there and it's less trouble for them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they don't know what's going to happen around the bunker, and they'll pull the driver on a sharp par four because their up and down percentages are. I think that last time I looked, if you were a 50% up and down player out of the bunker, you were like ranked 130th on the PGA Tour.
Wow.
So, but it's interesting, if you go on the buy.com tour now, you go to that tour and 50% up and down percentage ranks you about 30th. So, a real difference between the big tour and the little tour is the quality of short game performance. You guys all can hit the ball. But, when you go into a bunker, Paul, size it up and determine what your standards, what your goal needs to be. If this is going to be a tough bunker shot, then anywhere on the green is a good shot. Forget the flag. Play to the safe side of the hole and leave yourself a good two-putt. If you're a good bunker player, got a nice clean line and sand that makes you feel confident, then go ahead and take it a little more aggressive line to the flag. But you understand, for most of us as recreational golfers, I mean, you take the average 12 handicap, and I don't ask what any of y'all's handicaps are, but a 12 handicapper, if you think about it, there are 6 par holes on the golf course and 12 bogey holes, and you just beat your handicap. So, you don't have to go out and make a bunch of pars to shoot 82 or 85. You just have to make a handful and then not have any blow-ups in these 3 or 4 stroke later things. So if you hit the drive in the fairway, back to the programs, golf smarter. If you hit the drive in the fairway and hit a good approach on the green, this is now a par hole, maybe even a birdie. But if you hit the drive in the rough, this hole's starting to be a bogey, is going to be a good score. If you hit the second shot into the bunker, bogey's not going to be a bad score at all. So, you know, adjust your standards as you move from the tee toward the hole. Adjust your goals as to what this ought to be. I mean, you may be on the shortest par five on the golf course, but, you know, if you hit your drive behind a tree and have to pitch out sideways, this complexion of this hole just changed a lot. It's now a hard hole because, you know, you've had to sacrifice a shot. So all the holes are equally difficult. If you hit two really good shots, they all play easy. And if you hit two really bad shots, they all play hard. It really doesn't matter what the handicap ranking on the card is.
Wait, tell me that one more time. 12 handicap, 6 par, 6 bogeys?
That's 12 handicap, 6 bars and 12 bogeys. You know, that gives you an 84, and your 12 handicap is going to start moving downward to 9 or 10.
Ooh.
You shoot a bunch of 84s.
Thank you.
So bear in mind that, you know, I mean, I talk to a lot of golfers. I'm like, you know, I'm a 90 shooter, I'm a 95 shooter. Well, then there are no par holes on the golf course for you. I mean, if you make a par, just like, wow, I stole one. It's kind of like the scratch guy making a birdie. You stole one there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but be realistic about your expectations. This is a very hard game. What is it, like 5% of the golfers can break 90 regularly? So, you know, I hear people all the time say, well, I'm not a very good golfer. I shoot in the 80s. Really? Because shooting in the 80s is a very good golfer.
Well, and it depends where you're looking from, right? Haven't we talked about this?
Statistically. I mean, if you used to be a scratch and now you're shooting in the 80s, you need to go see your golf pro.
Or your doctor.
But, you know, your shrink. But, you know, I wrote my blog this morning about getting the yips and dealing with them. So, you know, it happens to everybody. But, I mean, it's a hard game. I mean, you think about it. I mean, Robin Williams gets one of my favorites. But, you know, okay, so there's a 4 1/4 inch hole a quarter of a mile down there across country. And I've got this little round white ball and an implement poorly suited for striking it. And I'm going to put it in that hole in four whacks. It's really absurd. But we can do it.
Well, we're not going to quote Robin on that one. Unless you wanted me to bleep it out. I have no problem bleeping it out.
It'll be all bleeps. Anyway, if anybody's ever heard Robin Williams' definition, it didn't take
my
golf. Really, go listen
to it. See, this is what the Short Game Academy is all about. I love these answers. You know, we talk to PGA professionals, teaching professionals a lot, and to me, those are guys that played golf really well as a kid, and they wanted to continue to play golf. But you come from a different place. You are a club designer. You are looking at, how am I going to make other people better from this design? And so, you see things like bunker shot and short shots very differently than just a teaching pro. And I love your perspective on this. And this is why I'm so excited about the Short Game Academy.
Well, and I like it too. I mean, I've been writing a blog under the moniker The Wedge Guy for 5 years. I think there's 500 some odd articles out there now. And I mean, there's a lot of things out there that your listeners can go dive into. And I like sharing my knowledge. Somebody asked me why I gave away all this knowledge for free. I said, because that's the way I got everything I know. Somebody was willing to give it to me. So, you know, and I boiled it around in my head and came out with my own take. But we're very focused at Score Golf on the short game. We're very focused on scoring because golf is a difficult game, but good scores are very gratifying, and very few people come off the golf course really happy. I hit a lot of good shots. I scored miserably, but I'm delighted. I mean, we kind of boil it down to the numerical gratification at the end of the day. Was that a number that made me happy? And, you know, you see guys in the locker room all the time say, God, I struggled all day today, but, man, I kept it together and shot 78 or 88 or 98, whatever your number is. And you look at the tour players and, you know, you see some of those guys that can just Band-Aid it together. They're not hitting it well, but they can salvage their round because they're good with their scoring clubs. And, you know, we are very focused on that at Score Golf. And we know we can help any golfer, regardless of their skill level, regardless of their physical strength attributes, we can help any golfer become better inside 9-iron range. And if you can be really good inside 9-iron range, you can play anybody's golf course. You can score better than you ever have because that's where the game is played.
Bottom line.
Yeah, I mean,
really
just
is.
Like – Nephew, you were talking a while ago, he hits at 300 and can't score. He's shooting in the mid-80s. If you're hitting at 300, you ought to be able to just, you know, tear the golf course apart, not right. Shooting in the mid-80s.
Yeah. Well, you know, it we talk about being shooting in the mid-80s is kind of like being in your 60s. To bad golfers, you're really good, and to good golfers, you're shooting in your 80s. You're big, not that good. You know, when you're in your 60s, to old people, you're young.
Yep,
to
exactly.
Young people, you're old.
60 is not near as old as it used to be, by the way, looking at it from this side of 60.
Yeah, right. Now that we're both on the back nine here in our lives.
Yeah, but 36 is the new 18. Don't forget that.
Oh, right. You mean scoring wise, or whole amount of holes you play in a day? Anyway,
the amount of holes you play. 60 well, is the new. Okay, so 60 is the new 40 in age.
Okay,
36 is the new 18 in golf, and 59 is the new 60 in scoring clubs.
There you go. We're all done. That works. Hey, John and Paul, not of McCartney and Lennon, but congratulations, John Shields and Paul Matsuda, because you guys have both earned the opportunity to get a free score. Not an opportunity. You have gotten a score 41-61 wedge of your choice, customized
scoring
for
club.
You. Scoring club. I'm not going to call it a wedge. I'm going to learn. It's a scoring
wedges,
club.
Wedges go in the bargain bin with persimmon woods. They're relics of a bygone era, and I will tell you all about that if y'all want to. Read about
all right,
plug.
Wedges smedges. So you've received the scoring club from Score 41-61. They'll be in touch with you so we can customize that for you. And anybody who wants to submit their question, please do. Just go to golfsmarter.com, click on the Score Zone Short Game Academy button, fill the information, give your question. It'll get to Terry. You will get an answer whether it's on the show or not. But if you're on the show, you like John and Paul, will receive a scoring wedge, scoring club from Score 41-61. Also remember that if these clubs are that interesting to you, and they should be, 10% off because you're a Golf Smarter listener. Use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER and you will get 10% off. Also, Golf Smarter members, 15% off. Check the members only site for the coupon code on that one. Make sure when you talk to the representative or go online that you mention the Golf Smarter coupon code to get your discount off. Terry, thank you very much again. We will talk to you soon, and that was awesome.
Okay. Thank you. Look forward to next time.
Episode number 348 for members only. We'll be back soon, followed by Golf Smarter number 349 featuring another Score Zone Short Game Academy. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.